you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey, Candace.
Marco.
Polo.
Marco.
Polo.
I actually know where Jane is, and we're not in a pool. We're talking about Marcus. We're talking about Marco Polo because he is our topic today, and he's not only the namesake of that very famous pool game, but he's also an established author and traveler, and some even say a political advisor. Supposedly.
That's right, and he was sort of like the original Indiana Jones. He lived back when basically, Europe didn't know a whole lot about the world around it. And for point of reference, this is about the 13th and 14th centuries.
And he grew up in Italy, in Venice specifically. And his father, Nicola, and his uncle, Maffeo, or Maffio, I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, M-A-F-F-E-O, they were travelers and traders. They were very, very shrewd businessmen, and they anticipated that there was this changing political climate in Constantinople that might enable them to get in on the gem trade, and so they hopped on board. And they were able to make a pretty good amount of money traveling back and forth along the Silk Road, which was a series of trade routes that connected merchants from Central Asia to Europe.
That's right, and unfortunately, because his father was such a traveler, his father and his uncle, they were gone for much of Marco Polo's life until he was about a teenager. And but when his father and uncle did come back, they discovered that his mother was dead. But they decided to have Marco continue the family business in sorts. So he actually ended up joining his father and uncle on their next trip back to China.
And the trip took them in total about 24 or 25 years. Historians debate that point. Mm-hmm. But 17 of those years were spent in the court of Kublai Khan. And that was primarily the reason that they went back to China, was because Kublai Khan had asked them to bring back Christian missionaries and holy oil that had been blessed by the Pope. And of course, the Polos obliged. I mean, how do you say no to Kublai Khan?
That's right. Although they weren't totally successful in bringing back the religious men who were supposed to come back and explain and defend Christianity to Khan. When they tried, the Pope actually assigned two friars to come with the Polos. pretty soon after the Polo set out, the friars were like, forget it, I'm heading back, this is too much for us.
Well, it's pretty intimidating, because if you think about who Kublai Khan was, he was the Mongol leader, and you remember probably another famous Khan that we've talked about before, Genghis Khan, and these are people who essentially took over this part of China and established their own empire, and they were formerly nomads, and then they realized that if they wanted to have a successful empire, they were going to have to be rooted and stay in place and establish themselves as merchants and traders and craftsmen. And so that's exactly what they did. So they had this very wealthy establishment, but Kublai Khan was interested in learning more about Christianity and also just business skills from outsiders.
That's true. And it was pretty fortunate, considering what you're saying about how important they were in their area, that they showed favor to the Polos. They were, you know, they saw them as like, ooh, special Europeans are coming and we're going to favor you and you need to tell us about your culture and have us learn about everything.
And they really liked Marco Polo, especially because he was young and he was bright and he was witty. And apparently he was really good at picking up languages. And he just really appealed to Kublai Khan. And again, this is debatable, but he was either made a political advisor or some sort of courier or low-level government official by Kublai Khan. And he was given a golden passport, which meant that he could travel to the ends of China and back.
That's right. And because of that, he was able to see all these things that no European had seen before, and just go to the ends of the empire there. And that's why he was able to write about so many amazing things later on.
So he spent, like we said, about 17 years in Kublai Khan's court. And we know that as he and his uncle and father traveled from Venice back to China, they covered about 24,000 miles. And they would have passed through the Middle East and Central Asia and then through China. And supposedly there were a lot of new goods that they discovered or that they saw for the first time along the way.
That's right. And legend is, didn't he take back pasta for the first time to introduce it to Italy? And
yeah.
A lot of people today think that, oh, you know, that originated in Italy. You know, they associate spaghetti with Italy. But it was actually Marco Polo who introduced it from China.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So in addition to pasta, he saw porcelain and silk and coal and his very first compass and also paper money. And paper money turned out to be a real biggie, because later on in his memoirs, when people were debating whether he had actually seen all of the things that he said, they were asking, well, you know, you were in China. Where are the mentions of the Great Wall or of foot binding, that practice?
That's right. Because he left those things out.
Yeah, but he did mention paper money, and later on, Europeans did see paper money, and they realized, then, Marco told us that this was coming, and he was right.
That's right.
And even despite acquiring malaria or some other serious illness along the way, he was a hardy little trooper. And once he got to Kublai Khan's court, he was not restless per se, but he wasn't just a sedentary European who came over to soak in the culture. He was very active in communicating with the people and traveling the land and trying to not only discover what all was available out there, but also to keep the trade, the Polo's trade alive, that business.
That's true. And they were pretty successful. They were able to get a lot of riches on the way. And like you said earlier, like, he picked up on languages so well. I read that the Khan actually sent him on like fact-finding missions when he went off to the ends of the empire. And that must have been a cool life, just like, hey, find out this for me and this crazy fact. And he goes and he does it.
That'd be pretty nice. I kind of like a position like that today. But the thing is, after a while, there was some unrest that started brewing between the Mongols and the Chinese, and the Polos wanted to leave because they saw that things were about to get nasty.
Yeah, not only that, but Kublai Khan was getting kind of old, and once he died, the Polos, you know, they had been shown favor with the Kublai Khan, but once he left, you know, they would not be secure of any favor from the next empire.
Definitely not. So they wanted to go ahead and get out of town, but Kublai Khan said no, and he was really insistent that they were going to stay. And, you know, what were they to do? They were outnumbered. It was three against all the Mongols.
Yeah.
But luckily, fortune smiled on them, because a Persian diplomat came over and said that Khan's great nephew wanted a princess from the Mongol tribe to marry. And so Khan agreed to let the Polos escort her back to Persia.
So this was their ticket back to Italy afterwards.
Yes.
Okay.
And once they got out of China, they went ahead and went on him to Venice afterward.
Yeah. I read one place, I'm not sure if this is true, but actually as soon as they set foot on like Christian soil again, they actually got robbed. The Polos got robbed of their riches that they had spent, you know, 20 years acquiring in China. And that must have been terribly disappointing.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure, because they were representatives of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing the ideals to the Mongols.
But at least he carried with him what he saw.
There you go. And here's where the story gets kind of fishy. And we've been saying, you know, words like supposedly and debatably. And the reason for that is because there are a lot of scholars and historians, both contemporary to Marco Polo and mm-hmm. today, who debate the authenticity of his accounts. And we should mention that his accounts were titled The Description of the World, or alternately titled The Travels of Marco Polo. And these were not slight books, or a slight book, rather.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a pretty hefty tome.
Mm-hmm.
And Marco Polo didn't write it himself.
That's right. He was actually imprisoned when he got back to Italy, which it happened because he got involved in a battle between the Venetians and the Genoese. And at this time, you know, before Italy was unified or and everything like that, these were actually two republics, and they were rivals at the time. So he was imprisoned by the Genoese, and while he was in prison, he actually met up with a popular writer of the time. He wrote romances. And so he would dictate, Polo would dictate his what he saw in China, his travels, and the writer actually wrote it down for him.
And the writer's name was Rusticello,
mm-hmm.
and he was a member of, I think, the French court. And so he would have been writing to entertain nobles. And so
okay.
some people think that he embellished Marco Polo's stories. And they were translated first into French and then into, I think, 150 different languages or disseminated to 150 different countries. And so you can imagine, it's almost like that game of telephone that you play when you're a child. You
sure,
pass along
yeah.
a secret from one ear to the next. By the time you get back to the person who originated the secret, it's been altered in some way.
That's right. And there's no original manuscript for which to, like, refer back to.
Exactly.
And this is even assuming that Rusticello actually wrote down faithfully everything that Polo said. It's possible because he was such a, you know, he was a writer of romances that he might have embellished things that Polo said.
Precisely. And so by the time it got through with several different editors and translators, the story was not in its original form by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But then Marco Polo, later on his deathbed, he was asked to retract the things that he had said. And he commented, I only told half of what I saw.
That's right. He stuck to his story.
He did. And not only that, he said, you know, if I had told you really what I had seen, you guys wouldn't have believed me any more than you believe what I did tell you.
And, right.
And that's true, because you think about the fact that China was such a mystery to the Europeans. Not only mm-hmm. was it far away, but they were isolated by treacherous terrain and mountains and oceans, and they had no idea what was going on over there, except for the goods that they saw come down the Silk
That's
Road.
That's true. And it should be noted, like, sort of to defend Polo, but also to explain maybe some inaccuracies in his story, was that he didn't talk about everything he saw. Like, everything he wrote in the book weren't things that he personally saw, but he got secondhand descriptions of from people he met there. And so if those were wrong, he wouldn't have known. But he told his side of the story, what he knew.
Right. And
yeah.
whether or not it is true, all of the accounts.
Right.
It forever changed how Europe regarded China. It gave rise to the first maps that Europe made mm-hmm. of parts of Asia and of China, and even influenced later explorers like Christopher Columbus, who was trying to find the Orient based on the descriptions and coordinates that Marco Polo gave. And in
yeah.
1492, I think we all know where he ended up.
That's right.
Not the Orient. So, and one of my favorite parts of the Marco Polo story is a little bit juicy and tawdry and pulpy, really, because we know from most accounts that he married a Venetian woman named Donata, and he had three daughters. But there are some accounts, or some legends, rather, that say he didn't marry an Italian woman. He married a woman that he met in Kublai Khan's court, actually his daughter, Hao Dong. And supposedly, Hao Dong traveled with him and his uncle and father,
okay.
and then returned with Marco to Venice. And she was ostracized by the people because she was so different. So she
Aww.
Would lock herself in her room and sing, which was her only comfort. She had a beautiful singing voice. And then we know that Marco came to be arrested. And in this version of the story, he wasn't arrested for leading an uprising against the Genoese. He was arrested because he'd married a non-Christian, and the Catholic Church had been eyeballing
him. That's an interesting story.
Even more scandalous. Because then, supposedly, his sister Lucia lied to Hao Dong and said that he had died. And she was so upset that she set her clothes on fire and hurled herself into the canals.
Wow.
So if you're in Venice today, you can hear her.
Oh, this is a ghost story there.
It's a ghost story. Yeah, you can hear her singing by the canals.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go there and check that out.
Exactly that. I'm actually on my way right now, so we're going to have to cut this short.
Oh, okay.
The point being, you know, we don't know definitively whether or not Marco Polo's accounts were true, and we don't know definitively all the details of his biography.
Yeah.
So we've done a quick history of Marco Polo.
And it only takes a click of a mouse to go to our website and learn about anything from Marco Polo, the history of China, or anything under the sun.
Even Genghis Khan, the man who started all before Kubla.
That's
on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. Underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies, so you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.